This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I haven't seen evidence that Walmart is dramatically better or dramatically worse than other companies in terms of trying to enforce some form of basic human rights and safety and environmental performance in their supply chain.
Last week on Sea Change Radio, we spoke with Stacy Mitchell, a researcher and author who believes that Walmart's sustainability efforts over the past 5 or 6 years have only disguised, not improved, the tremendous detrimental effects caused by the world's largest retailer. This week, we hear from a business and sustainability reporter who has a different perspective on Walmart's green campaign. Mark Gunther thinks that while Walmart still has a long way to go to become a truly responsible corporation, the company's work in this area represents important steps in the right direction. We discuss the parallels of Walmart and Apple's supply chain troubles, including slave-like labor conditions in China, and look at the Walmart situation from both a management and consumer perspective. After hearing both Stacy Mitchell last week and Mark Gunther this week, Sea Change Radio invites you to draw your own conclusions about this retail giant. I'm joined today on Sea Change Radio by Mark Gunther. He's a reporter who focuses on business and environmental issues. He wrote a cover story in 2006 for Fortune magazine entitled Walmart Saves the Planet. Mark, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thanks for having me.
Mark, Stacy Mitchell, who was on this show last week, thinks that Walmart is more a part of the problem than the solution. You've had quite an insider perspective on the company's efforts over the years. Do you think they're more part of the problem or part of the solution?
I think it's both. I think you could say the same thing about, you know, corporate America in general, as well as the consumer. But I guess my view of it is that we live, all of us, in an unsustainable society, particularly around the climate change issue. The responsibility for that is shared pretty widely. It's shared by the companies and their leaders. It's certainly shared by the government and its policies. And yet all of us, or at least most of us, as consumers are also complicit. You and I are doing this interview on laptops using Skype, and we're plugged into a grid that's burning 50% coal across the United States. So we're in a system that is badly broken, and Stacy and I actually both agree on that. The question is, you know, how are we going to get it fixed? And that's where she and I really depart company. I think it's going to take all the parts of the system to come into harmony, in a sense. I think we need the right policies, and I think we need conscious consumers. And we also need enlightened companies, and I would put Walmart in the category of enlightened companies. Others, Stacy and many others think that big business itself is the problem. I just don't know how you get from here to where we need to go without turning around big business. I don't know that there's a way to shrink or destroy, you know, Walmart, or for that matter, you know, the other big companies in the Fortune 500, and go to a world where we're local and small and beautiful. I don't know how to get there, number one, and I'm not sure if we did get there that it would be a more sustainable world. In fact, I think it's actually both impossible to get there, and I also don't think we can get there.
Recap some of the sustainability efforts that Walmart has put in place over the last 5 or 6 years.
So the goals of Walmart, I think, are unimpeachable. They're bold, and they are stretch goals by definition. That is to use 100% renewable energy, to generate no waste at all, and to sell larger quantities of sustainable products. The problem is progress to those goals has been really slow. It's difficult to know how much renewable energy Walmart uses. I don't think they've been as transparent as they should in terms of their reporting on this. In terms of waste reduction, they are doing better because the economics around that line up pretty nicely. If you waste fewer things with less packaging and more recycling, you can actually keep your costs down. That's in sync with their model. So they're making some progress there. And in terms of selling more sustainable products, merely because of their size, they've become the biggest seller of organic food and organic cotton in the United States. They've helped drive acceptability of the newer, more efficient CFL light bulbs. So they've made some progress there, but there's no question that all of us, you know, have a long ways to go in terms of rethinking our consumption habits. And I guess I have one other, you know, place or issue where Stacy and I are aligned when it comes to Walmart. I think there is a real challenge, not just with Walmart, but with any retailer around the whole question of growth and consumption. Until we can radically change the way we consume things, there's a tension between companies that want to grow and the world's need for a lighter environmental impact. However, again, I think it's possible to see our way to a model of sustainable consumption where growth and consumption and environmental responsibility can all live side by side. It's just that we are so far from there, it seems like it's going to be a real challenge to get there.
There's no question that the top-down policy can really affect many other businesses, like when Walmart puts in sustainable labeling or green, quote-unquote, green labels that kind of tracks the footprint of their products. That can have a big impact, not just on consumers, but also on their competitors. But in a more general sense, in a more philosophical sense, maybe, you spoke about their model for growth. I know if I owned a business, I don't think I would want it to be the size of Walmart's. I'd like, you know, maybe, let's say I had a really successful hardware store. Maybe two or three successful hardware stores would be pretty nice. But I mean, you said that it's there are some nice people there, and I'm sure there are when you meet them all individually. But you think that the beast that needs to be fed is bigger than the people at this point?
I do, and I think it's a good question. And you or I could start a business, and we could keep it small, but that would only work so long as you or I or some of our friends own that business. Once a company becomes a public company, as Walmart is, and as much of the U.S. economy is, that is, you know, one which is dependent on delivering returns to the shareholders, which is why shareholders buy stock. Growth of profit becomes an imperative because if you don't grow, I will sell my stock in your group of hardware stores and I will invest it instead in Home Depot, which is, you know, hell-bent on growing, or Walmart or Starbucks. So when you have a public company, growth becomes just part of the mission. And if you are uncomfortable with that, and certainly there are owners of companies who are uncomfortable with that, you're well advised to keep the company private, and then you don't face that same imperative.
But as a reporter who focuses on business and sustainability, you've seen that model has shifted with many other companies, and that becoming more efficient and self-sufficient and sustainable can mean increasing profits as well, right?
Yes. I mean, you know, in the world in which we now live, I do think there's an inherent tension between the shareholder / Wall Street demands on public companies to get bigger and bigger and the planet's need for lightening a footprint. Now, let me just make that argument a little more complex for a second. Let's just suppose that Walmart is the most efficient retailer in the world. That is, they move stuff around, package it, and sell it, and recycle it better than anyone else. If their growth comes at the expense of less efficient companies, which to some degree it has, you could argue, and they would argue, that there is an alignment between their growth and environmental responsibility. Another way to think about it is, you know, iTunes has become a major force, obviously, in the music industry. It has dematerialized music, therefore it's more efficient than Tower Records was. When it took more share of the industry from Tower Records or the corner record store, there you have a situation where growth and environmental benefit can be aligned. So it's not as simple as saying growth is bad. What I strongly object to is the notion that big is bad or that global is bad. Anyone who enjoys a cup of coffee or a bar of chocolate is going to have to accept the fact that we live in a global world. That is, unless you live in, you know, Costa Rica and enjoy your coffee. If you live in Maine or Oregon or San Francisco, you can't grow coffee or chocolate in those places. So we can't go back to a place where everything is local. And I don't think we'd want to. You know, that was kind of what the Middle Ages was, and it wasn't a great place to live. So I don't buy the local is beautiful movement. And I also don't buy the small is beautiful movement, because I think fundamentally we're going to make change by bringing a variety of pressures on big institutions to change. And those pressures can include regulatory pressure, consumer pressure, activist pressure, employee pressure, all of which are at work in corporate America today. Another way to think about this is, you know, let's just think about food for a sec, because I'm stealing this notion from Jason Clay, who works with businesses at the World Wildlife Fund, or WWF. He works with big companies like Walmart and Cargill and Mars and Starbucks. And when I asked him why, he said, I would rather find a way to change the way those 600 big companies that control X percent, and it's a large percent of the world's food supply, do their business, then try to figure out a way to change 6 billion consumers. And I think that model does make sense to me, because I have seen dramatic changes in companies, including Walmart.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with reporter Mark Gunther. Mark, Apple has been in the news lately because of its relationship with electronics manufacturing giant Foxconn and its human rights issues and really slave-like labor conditions. This is not a problem unique to Apple. Apple has gotten big and so enormous that their supply chain is a very complex web. Walmart's is even more unfathomable. Can you draw some of the parallels between the companies and when some of the challenges that are facing their key executives at this moment?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting parallel. You know, Apple is getting a lot of heat. Two terrific articles in the New York Times in the last few weeks, as well as a very provocative and lively piece on This American Life on public radio, looking at the, you know, as you say, not only slave-like conditions, but also in some cases dangerous conditions under which Apple products are made. And this is kind of the model for change, because you pick the most visible company in an industry. You go after the big brand, You push them. The idea is for them to set some standards and make some changes, and then the rest of the industry comes around. So you have NGOs, you have journalists. I assume there's internal pressure at Apple, although the company is so secret that it's hard to know what's going on inside. But people I've spoken with who do work with the company say they're taking these issues seriously. They also point out that Apple is actually no better for the most part and no worse than HP, Dell, Sony, or a bunch of companies you probably or may not have heard of, you know, Flextronics, which is kind of a, you know, provides a lot of parts to a lot of off-brand products, that they all use the same suppliers. And this is the challenge for activists and, you know, labor organizers in China is to change Apple, and the rest of the industry will come along. And I think, you know, Walmart is perhaps an even better example of a company where the ripple effects are you know, very hard to see or measure, but they're big. And I'll give you an example where I'll be critical of Walmart, but nevertheless suggest they made a difference. A couple of years ago, Walmart sent out questionnaires asking, I believe, 17,000 of their suppliers to report on their carbon footprint. And I believe there were some also human rights issues in the supply chain involved. In any case, it was a questionnaire that had, you know, 15 questions, if I'm remembering correctly, but it's close. Now, from what I've been able to fathom, they sent those questionnaires out. They came back. There's been some changes internally at Walmart in terms of who oversees their sustainability work. I've been unable to determine what, if anything, happened to those questionnaires. So was that greenwashing? Was it inefficiency? Was it they're still mulling over what to do with it? I don't know. What I do know is that all the companies that got those questionnaires suddenly said, oh my goodness, I better start figuring out what my carbon footprint is and how much renewable energy I use and what my packaging is, because Walmart is asking. The next thing they're going to be doing is giving favorable treatment to suppliers that do use less packaging or more renewable energy. So I know from consultants who've worked with those suppliers that the mere fact of the questionnaires created a ripple effect, even if so far they don't seem to have resulted in any actual behavior change inside Walmart.
I think one of the reasons why Walmart and Apple have stood out from the mainstream in terms of their supply chain is the enormous piles of cash that both companies sit on. Now, I realize, of course, that they have fiduciary responsibilities to their shareholders, but if you were a shareholder of Walmart or Apple stock, would you be happy with them using that cash to try to correct the problems with human rights abuses overseas rather than receiving a dividend?
Definitely. I think the far-sighted view of corporate responsibility would say, you know, in contrast to the industrial model where you tended to pay the employees as little as you can and charge the customers as much as you can and a very transactional view of the business, squeeze your suppliers, I think the more modern and enlightened view is that you view all of those business relationships as a network of relationships where you try to have a kind of win-win relationship with your suppliers, with your customers, and especially with your employees. So if I ran Walmart, I would try to, you know, if I could lift the pay scales of the workforce here, especially. You know, the challenge is they're in a world where there are stores that are actually selling things cheaper. Amazon is certainly one of them, not in the grocery area, but in the, you know, electronics and books and other areas, you know, the dollar store. So the challenge is, you know, if they pay their workers more, can they do so and, you know, not raise their prices?
And that's really the conundrum for a large company like Walmart is they've kind of bought into the whole, we're going to give it to you at the lowest possible price. And now that these enormous big box retailers have leverage that we've never seen before, where they can kind of dictate the terms for certain suppliers and they can pass that on, as they would say, to consumers in terms of savings. But that comes with a price, I believe.
It does. It comes with, you know, first of all, you externalize costs in terms of, you know, pollution in places where it's far away or, treatment of people in the supply chain that is or should be embarrassing. It's a bit of a conundrum, but I also think it's not if you position yourself slightly differently. And I think Walmart has tried to do this. I forget what their slogan is now, but I think it is something about live better. It's not the everyday low prices in the same way as it used to be. And they're also not doing very well, Alex. I mean, this is a point we perhaps ought to emphasize because it's easy to, you know, to hate a big company. Their stock has not done particularly well in the last few years since they, you know, started this sustainability drive. I don't think it's necessarily related, but, you know, their same store sales aren't growing. So it's not like they have a lot of profits sloshing around in a sales price that has gone up. I think you can make the case much more easily with Apple. You could say, why doesn't Apple behave more like Starbucks, for example, which charges a premium for its products, provides health insurance to its employees, you know, has a very healthy relationship with the coffee growers in its supply chain, and is using its leverage, I think, to become, you know, one of the models of what a responsible business looks like. By the way, I do think Apple is moving in that direction. That's somewhat the untold story of the Apple supply chain. And I think Walmart is moving in that direction too.
So from a consumer perspective, it's what are you supposed to do? I mean, if we really were going to not use our iPhones or any kind of mobile phone device, a lot of us would be missing that technology. And why stop there? We really should just stop wearing clothes and cleaning out our closets because the textile industry has been one of the worst offenders for a lot of these human rights violations. Where does it stop, and what can consumers do to feel good about themselves and the purchases that they make?
It's a great question, Alex, and I think it's really a hard one to answer. So at the margins, I think you do want to avoid the companies and products that are real outliers that have signaled that they really don't care at all. Perhaps even better, you want to reward some of the companies and brands that are working hard to change. I could name a few if you want.
Please.
You know, Nike and Patagonia and Starbucks. I'm sure I'm going to forget some here. Timberland. I mean, there's a lot of companies that are struggling to change their model and improve and treat all the people they deal with well.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm joined by reporter Mark Gunther. In her Grist series, Stacey Mitchell writes that she believes that Walmart's sustainability efforts began in direct response to the bad press surrounding Walmart's human rights and labor issues. Do you agree with that assessment?
There's no question that they were related. I don't know if they were designed as a way to refocus public attention, but the story as I heard it at the time was that Walmart was getting beat up about particularly, you know, workplace issues. They had a big sex discrimination suit filed against them. And I believe the conversation happened at the board of directors level where Lee Scott, who I think was really quite a visionary CEO, said, you know, I'm not enjoying this. It's not good for our company. Where else are we vulnerable? I don't want this to be the continuing story. And I think the environment surfaced at that point as another point of vulnerability that they then set out to correct. And you know, again, on the labor and human rights issues, just as well, two separate ones, the treatment of their own workers and then the treatment of workers in the factories that supply them. I don't think, and I'm ready to be corrected if there's evidence, I haven't seen evidence that Walmart, you know, is dramatically better or dramatically worse than other companies in terms of trying to enforce some form of basic human rights and safety and environmental performance in their supply chain. I think all the companies that are doing this, Apple, HP, Walmart, there are a few handful that are kind of out there really doing a better job. Gap, Nike, Timberland come to mind. But all of them are at a pretty basic stage where what they're measuring is how many factories did we inspect? You know, how many trainings for workers did we do? I've just been doing some reporting and thinking about this. They aren't really yet measuring their impact on the actual safety, health, and, you know, economic mobility or improvement of their factory workforce. So this whole area is only about 10 or 12 years old. It really started with the Nike scandal of 1998 and 1999. I think Walmart was slow to get into this area of taking responsibility for their whole supply chain, but they're there now, and I think they're very, very mainstream in terms of how they manage that. Their supply chain is obviously the biggest of everybody's, but I think they're very conscious of the reputational risks there, and they're trying to address them.
In general, Mark, how do you feel about big box retailers muscling in on traditional American retailers, and how do you feel about their impact on climate change?
I think actually the big box model, which came along in the, I guess, the 90s and 2000s and wiped out a lot of so-called Main Street stores, is now under severe challenge itself from the online model. You know, I know a lot of people who are buying a lot of things that are not books or CDs from Amazon and
or eBay or Craigslist.
Yes, that's the other thing. This whole idea of the sharing economy where people are trading things and there's peer-to-peer markets developing. I think the Walmarts and Best Buys of the world and Target too are going to have to become much more service-oriented if they want to survive against the big, very efficient online merchants. An interesting statistic I recently heard was that despite great success in the supermarket and retailing industry in reducing some packaging, we've all heard the stories, I think, about concentrated laundry detergent, the overall amount of packaging used in America actually went up last year. And the reason for that is that more things are being shipped in corrugated cardboard, which is really packaging you don't need when you buy a book at the store, or I just bought some toothpaste from Amazon the other day because it was considerably less expensive than what I would pay at my local drugstore. So
yeah, you can't bring your own bag to Amazon, right?
That's right. So I'm not sure where it's going, but I think the Walmarts and Best Buys and Targets are going to have to offer more to their customers. And I'm hoping that one of the elements of that more will be a more responsible model.
Mark Gunther, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Alex, thanks for having me. I definitely enjoyed the conversation.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to SeaChange Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Grant Green, The Meters, Duke Ellington, and Charles Mingus. SeaChange Radio is made possible by support from Farm Fresh to You Organic Produce Delivery Service, connecting people to farms and leading the progressive change in America's food system. To learn more, go to farmfreshtoyou.com. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to SeaChange Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.